Hi, this is Rabbi Jim Egolf. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I appreciate you've decided to join me. Well, this is my Rosh Hashanah morning sermon. And probably one of the key issues that ties it together is that there's this line from a prayer called Unatana Tokef. And it goes through a series of things in terms of the best of times and the worst of times. It starts off who will live and who will die, but one of those lines that comes up is who will be rich and who will be poor. Given what's been going on in our national conversation lately, who's rich and who's poor is weighing heavily on a lot of Americans and a lot of, I'm sure, you listeners. And so I offer these thoughts on what we're facing, and most importantly, what we really need to reinstill that precious thing called the American dream. Shalom. A farmer who had experienced several bad years went to see the manager of his local bank. "I've got some good news, and I've got some bad news to tell you. Which would you like to hear first?" the farmer asked. "Well," the banker replied, "why don't you tell me the bad news first and get it over with?" "Okay. With the bad drought and inflation and all, I won't be able to pay anything on my mortgage this year, either on the principal or the interest." The banker thought for a moment and said, "Well, that's pretty bad." "It gets worse. I won't be able to pay anything on the loan for all the machinery I bought, nor on the principal or the interest." "Wow, is that very bad?" "It's worse than that. You remember, I also borrowed to buy seeds and fertilizers and other supplies. Well, I can't pay anything on those either, principal or interest." The banker couldn't stand it any longer. "That's awful, and that's enough. Tell me, what's the good news?" "The good news," the farmer replied with a smile, "is that I intend to keep on doing business with you." The Torah portion for this day is clear and disturbing, and in spite of it, we keep doing business with God. As our rabbinic intern Joyce mentioned, it speaks to a time when it was normal for any man to act in the way that Abraham did, except that the majority of the kids were not as lucky as Isaac. The theme, while disturbing, is about changing to create hope. Today I want to bring us to the Haftarah for this sacred day, which is about promises and hope fulfilled. There is something deep that I need to speak about in this passage from Nehemiah. Nehemiah was one of the leaders who brought the Jews back from exile to the land of Israel after the Edict of Cyrus in 536 BCE. Nehemiah, or Nehemiah, actually means God's mercy or God's comfort. Nehemiah. The book of Nehemiah is about the hope people struggled to hold on to as they returned to rebuild the desolated land of Israel. These often obscure books from our Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, speak of the hope we need today as we grapple with those who would devastate and have devastated our lives. After the destruction of the First Temple in 586 BCE, the return of Jews to the land of Israel was promised by prophets, but was not a foregone conclusion. Our ancestors thrived in the Persian Empire, and return to Israel was always this great idea, but when it became possible, it was not high on their priority list. Some did return. They were not the best, and they were not the brightest. Many were elderly, who had seen Jerusalem when it stood as the city of David with the temple of Solomon. The Bible recounts that they wept when they saw the reconstruction of the temple, for it was a pale shack compared to its glorious predecessor. These early returnees had to work hard to reestablish a culture and religion after 50 years in exile. And the story contained in this book of Nehemiah is a reminder that through hard work and belief in a better tomorrow, hope can bring you to a promised land. We had to tolerate offense and annoyance this past week in a dream as we sat around and got to experience either dream or, maybe better put, a nightmare. I personally was not surprised that Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad showed up last week in New York to cause problems. I know why he made the trip. He did so to drive the Israeli government, the U.S. government, and the Jewish world crazy by his presence here. When we see Ahmadinejad, many of us see the manifestation of Haman in our world today. Even Elie Wiesel was driven this past week to call for the United Nations to indict Ahmadinejad for inciting genocide. However, there was a worse moment when Jews sat supported with the Iranian president. He reportedly met with Rabbi Moshe Ber Beck of Neturei Karta, an ultra-Orthodox anti-Zionist group. While we may fight about how we support Israel, it is tragic when it's our own people who we find meeting with those who would oppose the hope offered by the modern state of Israel. Israel can best be described as a hope. Even in Hatikva, the Israeli national anthem, Israel is described as the eternal hope of Jews everywhere. This week, the Israeli political leader and commentator Yossi Sarid wondered whether combining the Israeli hope with the American dream was really a good idea. In a Haaretz article entitled "It's You, Stupid," he criticized the capitalist economy and ended his article with the following words: "Those who dream of being like America and long to be part of the American dream could end up on the rubbish heap when the dream is dashed." Our American dream is being questioned this week by both our enemies and our allies. Now, Sarid is solidly on the far left in Israel, yet his words reflect how the world sees us. It reminds us that James Thruslow Adams, who coined the phrase the American dream, saw that dream differently than Sarid, or as many Americans see it today. Adams wrote, "It is not the dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order, in which each man and each woman shall be able to maintain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position." The American dream is a socio-economic meritocracy. It is an egalitarian social order beyond the capacity for buying material possessions. Many felt that the Iranian president assaulted that dream this week as he suggested our empire was arriving at a quick end. But no one said the same of those who really hurt and assaulted that dream. Dick Fold, Michael J. Williams, Richard Syron, Robert B. Willemstad, made bets from New York that will cost each of us about $8,600. I'm speaking of the $1 trillion bailout this past week. The funding of Adam's American Dream is a noble goal. Until we arrive at the point where in our history where it turns into the nightmare that Sarid describes. While many are angry that Ahmadinejad made his comments about America or Israel, it is our own American business that hurt our country on a far grander scale. As of this writing, the Iraqi war has cost only, gosh, I can't believe I'm putting the word only in front of this phrase, but only $557 billion. So who did more damage? The man who came to New York and said many offensive things and makes threats with nuclear weapons that he doesn't necessarily possess at this moment, or our own citizens, some of who are paid nine-digit salaries while they proceed to bankrupt America. For the Iranian president, we had protests and rallies against his visit to our country. It was a show of national unity, a support for Israel, but who really deserves our protests? I would like to see protests outside all the companies who took the American dream, the hope of hundreds of thousands of our fellow citizens, and use that hope to trade in false promises. I don't like the president of Iran, but the people who hurt our country and, by extension, our allies, including Israel, even more this past week, are those who created this financial collapse. You and I will have the privilege of paying for their mistakes. I'm angry. Not because of the money, though this wouldn't make me happy. I'm angry because we have passed on their mistakes to our children. We have shamed ourselves in the world economy by allowing these men to abuse our laws and regulations. Our American dream is being sold out by people who are supposed to hold things in trust for the good of America. Just to show us this absurd crisis continues, Business Week reported that many who created all of this now known as toxic debt, they may end up being the very people who advise our Treasury Secretary on which debts to buy. We are already suffering from corporate patriotism. It's called Halliburton. They have those cost-plus contracts, which are non-competitive, and encourage the corporation to spend more to get more. I'm not feeling hopeful or dream-driven as I continue to hear this story. We are hurting ourselves if we allow the people who used the American dream to enrich themselves. We're going to let these people guide the solution to the mess they created. If we are going to avoid Sarid's description of a nightmare, we have to return to the American dream. We are a country that prides itself on the ability of the underdog, the immigrant, the greenhorn, to make it here. If they can't make it in our system, then we have allowed the system to replace the dream. At one failed company, the CEO had a salary of nine digits to the left of the decimal point. Nine digits. Most lottery drawings are only eight digits. This guy, nine. He won the lottery every year. I have a hypothesis. If you can't feel that you have the American dream unless you make nine digits, then you can't have the American dream because you don't understand it. You have lost what Nehemiah sought to instill in the returnees from Persia. You have lost the hope that the Judeans had, who wept when they saw the new temple in Jerusalem, but stayed anyway because the purpose of their presence was more than just having land. It was more than having wealth. It was a matter of planting hope in a dream. I need for you to be like Nehemiah as we begin this year. No, I don't want you to go to Israel and try to build the walls of the old city. But I do want you to plant some hope. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about those people who you might know, who might be affected by this crisis. Maybe you even know somebody who lost their job at Lehman Brothers, or Freddie Mac, or Fannie Mae, or maybe facing job elimination from AIG. During these days of awe, I want you to instill some hope in them. Today, while you may not be sure of how the crisis is affecting them, I want you to call and reach out to them. They may tell you that they are fine, but they may also be waiting for someone to acknowledge that they are worried. They are living with the anxiety of losing their job every day. Let them know that you care. Additionally, about 10 days ago, Rabbi Edith Held Mencher of the Union for Reform Judaism published an article about this crisis. You can find copies of this article in the show notes. After Rabbi Mencher describes the situation, she offers 5 guides to help talk with people who are distressed by this calamity. I want you to read her article. I want you to think about it. I want you to find a way to do your part to bring some sense of hope to those people who come into this Rosh Hashanah and who are choking externally or internally. When we get to that line, who will be rich and who will be poor? Because they are waking up to the fear every day of what might happen. When you leave this place, your mission, your purpose is to plant hope. The hope created by caring for your neighbors. The hope found in listening without judging people whose jobs are in danger. And who actually, and here's the tragic irony of it, they did their jobs well. Be present and instill a sense that they do not walk this dark valley alone, but you are there to care and affirm them as humans created in the image of God. We are facing uncertain and many dark days, weeks, and months ahead. We all have the power to give the light of hope if we walk through this journey together. I need for you to express the name of Nehemiah as we weather this crisis and allow yourselves to be Nehemiah, extensions of God's compassion and mercy to others. Our fortress at this point will not be built out of walls of stone, but walls of hope that a dream called America continues to exist. And I want you to do your part and act and tell each other and tell those who are most distressed that that dream continues to exist. That dream is worth living for, and that dream is the United States of America. Chatima Tova, may you be inscribed, and through your actions, may you inscribe yourself in the Book of Life. Shana Tova.